Hey everyone, welcome back to Daily Newsletter Digest. It's May 2nd, 2026, and wow, we've got a packed show today.
Yeah, I mean, where do we even start? Cancer-sniffing dogs? Space-based solar? The first company that can literally make it rain?
Right? And that's just the tech section. We've also got some wild moves in AI. Crypto took some serious hits, and oh, Berkshire's annual meeting without Warren Buffett for the first time in 60 years.
That's going to be interesting. But okay, let's dive in. You mentioned cancer-sniffing dogs. I saw that headline and honestly thought it was a joke at first.
So did I. But no, this is real, and the numbers are staggering. There's a company called Dognosis that trains beagles, Labradors, and even shelter dogs to detect cancer biomarkers in breath samples. They published a phase 2 study in the Journal of Clinical Oncology, the largest breath-based multi-cancer detection study ever, with over 3,000 participants across 6 hospitals in India.
And the results?
90.8% sensitivity and 91.3% specificity across 7 cancer types. But here's the kicker. For early-stage cancers, stage I and 2, they hit 90.6% sensitivity. Compare that to Grail's Galleri blood test, which is considered the gold standard right now, and it's only detecting about 16% of early-stage cancers.
Wait, 16% versus 90? That's not even in the same ballpark.
Exactly. And Galleri costs $500 to $1,000 per test. Dognosis is designed to be radically cheaper, which is huge for markets like India, where 80% of cancers are caught at stage 3 or 4, and only about 1% of the population has ever been screened.
So how does it actually work? Are the dogs just sniffing people?
Kind of. Patients breathe into a face mask, and then teams of dogs sniff the samples. But here's where it gets high tech. The dogs wear EEG helmets and sensor suits. AI reads their physiological responses to detect when they've identified cancer markers. It's this wild fusion of biology and machine learning.
That's incredible. And you said they're targeting India specifically?
Yeah, because that's where the need is most acute. But the implications are global. If you can screen populations at scale for a fraction of the cost of blood tests, you're talking about catching cancers years earlier and saving millions of lives.
Okay, and there was another cancer detection story, right? Something about AI and CT scans?
Yes. Mayo Clinic developed an AI model called RedMod that can flag pancreatic cancer up to 3 years before clinical diagnosis using routine abdominal CT scans that were already read as normal by radiologists.
3 years early?
3 years. And it achieved 73% sensitivity versus 39% for specialist radiologists, with a median lead time of 16 months. Pancreatic cancer is one of the deadliest and hardest to detect cancers out there, so this is a massive deal. They're moving to a prospective trial called AI PACED now.
So between the dogs and the AI, we're looking at a potential revolution in early cancer detection.
Absolutely. And honestly, both of these feel like they could be among the biggest healthcare stories of the year.
Agreed. Okay, shifting gears. You mentioned space-based solar earlier. What's going on there?
So Meta signed what's being described as the first capacity reservation agreement with a startup called Overview Energy. The plan is to put satellites in geostationary orbit that capture solar energy in space, convert it to laser light, and beam it down to existing terrestrial solar farms.
Laser light from space. That sounds like science fiction.
It does, but the idea is you're decoupling electricity delivery from fixed geographic locations. You're not limited by weather or time of day. Meta's deal is for up to 1 gigawatt of power.
1 gigawatt? That's a lot of power. And this is for their data centers, I assume?
Presumably, yeah. They're building out massive AI infrastructure, and power is the limiting factor right now, which actually ties into another story we'll get to in a bit.
Okay, hold that thought. But sticking with Meta for a second. Didn't Zuckerberg also announce something big for biology research?
Yes, the Chan Zuckerberg Biohub committed $500 million to something called the Virtual Biology Initiative. $400 million goes toward generating massive multimodal biological datasets, proteomic, genomic, transcriptomic, and next-gen imaging tools like Cryo-ET. They're partnering with NVIDIA on this. The other $100 million is distributed as grants to places like the Broad Institute, the Sanger Institute, and the Human Cell Atlas.
What's the goal?
Build datasets an order of magnitude larger than today's benchmarks. We're talking billions of cells, as a step toward accurate predictive models of the cell. Basically, they want to create a digital twin of human biology that you can run simulations on.
That's ambitious and expensive.
Very. But if it works, the applications for drug discovery and disease modeling are enormous.
All right, so what about this company that can make it rain? Because that sounds dubious.
I know, but apparently it's real. Rainmaker's CEO announced they produced over 143 million gallons of verifiable man-made precipitation last quarter, validated via radar and satellite data. They're claiming to be the first company to routinely and unambiguously modify weather.
Okay, how?
The details are thin, but the key word here is verifiable. They're not just cloud seeding and hoping for the best. They're tracking results with radar and satellite and saying, yes, we made this rain happen.
That has huge implications for agriculture, drought relief, and probably some ethical questions too.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, if you can make it rain over your farmland, what happens to your neighbor? But the technology itself is fascinating.
Definitely something to watch. All right, let's talk AI. We've got a lot to cover here.
We do. Let's start with the big picture. There's a multi-part series from a newsletter called Nutty that just wrapped up, and the central argument is this. The next decade of AI infrastructure is going to be shaped by who can deliver power to GPUs with the least loss.
Power again. This keeps coming up.
Because it's the bottleneck. You've got data centers that need massive amounts of electricity, but the grid can't deliver it fast enough. Upgrades take 4 years or more. So the question becomes, what do you do in the meantime?
And the answer is?
Generate power on site. There was this whole investment narrative arc where everyone got excited about small modular reactors, SMRs, because Microsoft, Amazon, Meta, Google all started talking about nuclear. Nuclear stocks surged. But when you actually looked at the details, it didn't add up. NuScale's first major project got canceled. Oklo's data center commitments are described as long-dated, largely non-binding. Even the more credible players like TerraPower and Kairos Power are on timelines that don't match AI's immediate needs.
So the market shifted.
Exactly. From who can provide the biggest power source someday, to who can power the GPUs now. And that's where a company called Bloom Energy comes in. They offer on-site power generation, fast deployment, and 800-volt DC output, which is exactly what data centers need.
So Bloom basically sidesteps all the delays?
Right. The author of this piece is careful to say it's not an endorsement of Bloom as a perfect company, but it explains why the market has gravitated toward it. The broader investment question is which companies are proving demand through real orders versus those still trading on narrative.
Makes sense. Okay, what about actual AI models? Any big releases?
Oh yeah. xAI launched Grok 4.3, which scores higher on the intelligence index while costing less to run than the previous version. It's one of the lowest cost models at its intelligence level now.
That's a big deal for anyone running these models at scale.
For sure. And then there's Anthropic, which is reportedly nearing a $50 billion funding round that could value the company at $900 billion or higher.
Wait, $900 billion?
Yeah. Their revenue is approaching a $40 billion annual run rate, so investors are clearly betting big on them.
That's insane. And didn't they also launch something for security?
Yes. Claude Security entered public beta for enterprise customers. It uses the Opus 4.7 model to identify and patch software vulnerabilities. Partners include Microsoft Security and Palo Alto Networks.
So they're going after the cybersecurity market now.
Looks like it. And it doesn't require custom API integration, which lowers the barrier for enterprises to adopt it.
Okay, and then there was that big acquisition, Cursor, right?
Yes. Cursor was acquired by xAI for $60 billion. Cursor's been described as the most operationally successful software company of the AI era. It's a coding assistant that developers absolutely love.
Why would XAI want it?
Two reasons. One, XAI gets a high-profile developer application to showcase to public market investors ahead of a potential SpaceX IPO. Two, Cursor gets a powerful compute sponsor and operates alongside a non-competing model lab. It's mutually beneficial.
Smart move. All right, let's talk benchmarks for a second. There was that Epoch AI podcast about whether benchmarks are broken.
Right. The central tension is that benchmarks saturate so fast now. Most last only months before AI systems top them. But the argument from Epoch is that we're actually in a golden age of benchmarking because the absolute information gleaned from benchmarks is growing even if they answer a shrinking fraction of questions.
So they're not doomed. They just need to evolve.
Exactly. They highlighted a few promising directions. One is algorithmically scorable tasks with scalable difficulty, like their mirror code benchmark, which tasks AI with re-implementing existing command line programs from documentation alone. Tasks scale from simple utilities up to 100,000 plus line code bases.
And the top AI systems can handle that now?
Yeah, using hundreds of millions to a billion tokens. Which is wild when you think about it, re-implementing something like the Common Mark Markdown spec, which is a 16,000-line C reference implementation that would take a human weeks, is now doable for AI.
That's a good example of the benchmark reality gap, though. Just because it can do that doesn't mean it can do everything.
Right. And they talked about that, too. When AI hit 50% on GPQA Diamond, a lot of people predicted way bigger real-world impacts than actually materialized. So there's this systematic tendency to over-extrapolate from benchmark scores.
Okay, let's switch to crypto, because it sounds like April was rough.
Oof, yeah. DeFi suffered a record $635 million in exploits last month. 28 separate incidents.
$635 million? That's brutal.
And two incidents accounted for 91% of that. The Drift protocol drain was $285 million, and the Kelp DAO bridge exploit was $293 million.
What happened with Kelp?
The exploit triggered a sharp drop in total DeFi TVL, over $10 billion. Capital just fled. AV's TVL fell nearly 40% to around $15 billion, dropping it to second place behind Lido.
That's a confidence crisis.
Totally. And it sparked this whole debate about whether the DeFi United coordinated response was effectively a bailout, and what that means for decentralization.
Okay, but on the bright side, didn't Bitcoin and Ethereum do well price-wise?
They did. Bitcoin gained 14% in April, testing 80,000. Ethereum was up 7%, hitting 2450. Total crypto market cap went above 2.6 trillion.
And the ETFs?
Bitcoin ETFs saw nearly 2 billion in net inflows. BlackRock's iBit dominated with 733 million. That's 89% of the total. Ethereum ETFs turned net positive after a five-month outflow streak, adding 356 million.
So institutional money is still flowing in, even with all the exploits.
Right. Which is interesting. It suggests the market is separating DeFi risk from broader crypto adoption.
Makes sense. All right, let's talk about some of the weirder stuff. De-extinction?
Oh yeah. Colossal Biosciences announced plans to de-extinct the bluebuck antelope, which has been extinct for over 200 years. They extracted DNA from a specimen at the Swedish Museum of Natural History.
Can they actually bring it back?
Well, technically it would be a hybrid. They're editing a related species' genome. So it's not a true resurrection. But Colossal argues the technology has immediate applications for 29 currently endangered antelope species.
So it's like conservation through genetic engineering.
Exactly. And Colossal is valued at $10 billion now. So investors are clearly taking this seriously.
All right, what about that brain-computer interface company, Phantom Neuro?
So Phantom Neuro is building implants that let amputees control robotic prosthetic limbs using thought. But unlike Neuralink or Synchron, which require brain surgery, Phantom's implant goes near the amputation site and interfaces with motor neurons.
So it's way less invasive.
Much less. The surgery is simpler and faster. And the founder, Connor Glass, has this longer-term vision where healthy people might choose elective amputations to replace biological limbs with superior robotic ones.
Wait, voluntarily becoming a cyborg?
Yeah. It's speculative, obviously, but it's part of this broader transhumanist trend, where the line between human biology and machine augmentation gets increasingly blurred.
That's a lot to unpack. Okay, let's talk markets. The S&P hit an all-time high, right?
It did. Closed at 71.65, up 30% year over year. And here's the crazy part. It recovered from a roughly 10% sell-off during the Iran conflict in just 11 trading sessions. That's the fastest V-shaped recovery ever recorded.
11 sessions? That's insane resilience.
Right, but it's also rekindled this debate over whether stocks are overvalued. Warren Buffett is sitting on a record $373 billion in cash at Berkshire and basically said stocks don't look cheap.
And Paul Tudor Jones?
He went further. He pointed out that stock market cap relative to GDP is at 252% versus 65% in 1929 and 170% in 2000. He said mean reverting to historical PE levels would imply a 30 to 35% decline.
Okay, but there's a counter argument, right? Because profit margins are way higher now than they were in the 90s.
Exactly. Profit margins are roughly double what they were back then. Forward earnings growth is more than double the long-term average, and there's $8 trillion sitting in money market funds, nearly double pre-pandemic levels. The Fed balance sheet is still at $6.7 trillion after peaking at $9 trillion during COVID.
So there are structural reasons for elevated asset prices.
Right. But Fed chair nominee Kevin Warsh called the bloated balance sheet fiscal policy in disguise and said the Fed is not blameless for the widened wealth gap. So there's definitely tension here.
And Berkshire's annual meeting is happening now, right? For the first time without Buffett as host?
Yeah. Greg Abel, the new CEO, is hosting his first meeting. Berkshire shares are down more than 5% year-to-date and have trailed the S&P by over 30 percentage points since Buffett's retirement announcement.
That's rough. What are shareholders asking about?
Mainly what Abel plans to do with that $373 billion in cash, how he'll handle the underperforming Kraft Heinz stake, and whether AI will shape Berkshire's future strategy.
Big questions. All right, let's talk housing for a second, because there was a lot in that roundup.
Yeah, California passed a significant package, including SB 79, which legalizes housing up to 9 stories near BART and Caltrain stations, and up to 6 stories near Muni and LA Metro lines. OpenPhil estimates this could add over 1 million housing units.
1 million units? That's huge.
It is. And New Hampshire signed a bunch of reforms, too. Single-stair buildings up to 4 stories, parking minimums capped at 1 unit, ADU expansion. But New York City developers are doing something weird.
What's that?
They're filing permits for exactly 99-unit buildings en masse, 28 such permits in the last 4 quarters, versus a handful over the prior 16 years, to avoid wage requirements in the tax abatement program that add 20% or more to hard costs for 100-plus unit buildings.
So they're capping buildings just under the threshold to save money?
Exactly. Which means fewer total units get built. It's a perfect example of how well-meaning policies can backfire.
Yeah, and the second staircase requirement.
The government's own cost-benefit analysis found its costs are 294 times greater than its benefits, but it's still law. London's only building 5% of its housing targets, partly because of this.
That's absurd.
It really is. The whole newsletter is just example after example of regulatory barriers that make housing impossible to build.
All right, we should probably wrap up. Anything else we need to hit?
Just a couple quick ones. Spirit Airlines is preparing to liquidate after a proposed $500 million government bailout collapsed. The Pentagon signed AI deals with 7 companies, including OpenAI, Google, Microsoft, Amazon, NVIDIA, xAI, and a startup called Reflection, but excluded Anthropic due to supply chain risk concerns.
Wait, Anthropic was excluded?
Yeah, which is interesting given they're one of the leading AI safety companies. But apparently there were concerns about their supply chain.
Huh. and then there's the royal visit, right?
King Charles and Queen Camilla visited the US for the America 250 celebration. There was a whole explainer about why Philip was never called king. Basically, that title is reserved for active monarchs, and using king consort might have implied he outranked Elizabeth.
Makes sense. All right, I think that's everything. What should people watch for next week?
The big things are Berkshire's Q1 earnings, any updates on the Iran peace talks, and whether we see more DeFi exploits or if that was just a bad month. Also, the tokenized deposit network that those five regional banks are building on ZK Sync is targeting a Q3 pilot, so that's worth keeping an eye on.
Cool. All right, everyone, thanks for listening. We'll be back tomorrow with more news.
See you then.